Okay, I'm going to try one more crack at this numeracy thing. Emmanuel, I want to see what you have to say. So we created this scenario of a lower risk situation than the first case. A patient who's on an LHRH agonist now has PSA progression. They're castrate insensitive. PSA level is 3.4, doubling time is 10 months. So my question to the audience is, what would you say to this patient, the likelihood that they're going to have metastatic disease in, let's say, 3 years? And it looks like the audience is somewhere in the range of maybe 25 to 50%. Emmanuel, what kind of number would you give?
I think 50% is a reasonable guess.
50%, okay. And does that mean, and we asked the audience, how much of an absolute benefit? So if you buy 50%, then you would think the absolute benefit ought to be somewhere in the range of 25. We know it doesn't quite work out that well. Is that the math you would use, Emmanuel?
Yeah, I would say 20% if you used APA or ENZA.
And again, just kind of curious, are you treating patients like this? Because a lot of the audience isn't.
I mean, this one, I would be on the fence. His PSA is low. The absolute number is low at 3.4. The doubling time is right on the cusp. So I think this would be an individualized choice. But in my practice, I typically would not.
You would not. Cora, would you treat or not? And if so, with what?
I think that it would really depend upon the patient. This is a young man. He's 65. It would depend also on his comorbidities. He's not at very high risk. He's just right there on the 10-month where the curve starts to get worse. I would see how nervous he is and how much he wants to be treated and how motivated he is, too. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here.
Although, you know, Emmanuel, you're saying there's a 25% chance this man is going to avoid having, at least for the time being, metastatic disease at 3 years by adding this in, but you would still observe him. Oliver, again, you agree with the numbers that you're hearing about this case, and what would you do?
General agreement on the numbers, and I would probably not trade in this individual. We have a little more time. We have a little more runway. He's not going to get in trouble anytime soon, and I would probably just defer treatment a little bit longer.
Howard?
We actually don't know what the optimal number is to compromise the response. So is it a difference if you treat that patient when it's 3.4 versus 20? We actually don't know that. So in some ways, I would tend to monitor this patient. But we do see some patients who are so concerned about it and just need something done for their own sanity.
So you're all saying observe, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, this patient would have been eligible for any of the three major phase three trials.
Correct, but he would have been the best patient on the trial because he had a low PSA, close to the cutoff of 2, and the slowest rate of rise.
So again, you think you might observe a patient like this?
I may, and they say that while all three of those studies included patients with a PSA doubling time of less than 10 months, the median all the trials was 4 to 5 months.
Oh, interesting. That's a good point.
The second thing I'd add is that you've made him a better prognosis patient by telling us he had a negative PSMA PET scan, so his risk for clinical progression would be lower than the average patient without that information.
Oliver, you were mentioning to me that, quote, the PSMA scan is almost always positive, so these people really have metastatic, I mean, we know they have disease.
I think you can take this non-metastatic space according to conventional imaging and then add molecular imaging and come up with a very different sort of conclusion. I think the vast majority of these individuals enrolled on all three trials would have had molecular imaging positive. Now, is there utility to using the molecular imaging? Is there a positive benefit? I'm not really sure yet. There's only one trial I'm aware of that's really looking at this space, and we have no data.
So, Cora, what about the older patient? When we asked the faculty, you know, it looks like a lot of people are kind of split between apalutamide and enzalutamide. Certainly the numbers look very similar. But what about the 80, the 85-year-old patient, Cora? Again, when you start thinking about the numbers, think about the adjuvant online model, for those of you who remember it. It actually factored in competing causes of mortality. Literally, it was one of the bars in adjuvant online. And it got to be 85, 90-year-old patient. It diluted out the benefit. Cora, can you talk a little bit about how you approach the older, the 80, 85-year-old patient with M0 disease?
I think that the 80 depends on 80, because there are 80s who are 70 and 60 and go horseback riding every day, and there are 80s who are 90. And so it really depends upon the person and their comorbidities and the other medicines that they're taking and what kind of health they're in. So I think just saying 80 alone without having that patient in front of me makes it very, very difficult for me to say, and I don't treat all 80s the same. So an 80 who's really feeble, I would be very scared to put on enzalutamide also because I would be afraid of falls, for example, whereas I wouldn't be afraid in a 60-year-old.